Hello, everybody. Welcome to GSC's Rude Mechanicals. This is our podcast where I'm having a chat with some of the magicians who work behind the shows that we create. So these are the directors, the designers, the choreographers, stage managers who bring these wonderful shows to life. And our first podcast is going to be with sound designer and composer Matt Eaton. Hi, Matt. How are you doing?
Hi there. Very good, Matt. Thank you.
Now, Matt has worked on 21 of our shows, going right back to Hamlet in 2011. And his 21st show, All's Well That Ends Well, won him an Off West End Theatre Award for sound design. How was that?
It was great. It was a great, it was a great night out, actually. I went with the director, Tom Littler. And,
fabulous.
Yeah.
Thank you. So, Matt, what's your backstory to GSC? How, you know, where did you come from before we met you? And I say you've done 21 of our shows over the last 10 years nearly. What were you up to before then, and what other things do you do?
Well, I pretty much the same as I do now. I was doing a lot of music, composing music production. And I'd been working within theatre as a sound designer and composer for about, I think, 5 years, five, six, 7 years, something like that. 2 years dabbling and then taking it seriously, maybe sort of for 5 years prior to 2011 when we met for the first time.
And was sound design something you were always... You know, did you wake up one day and went, I'm going to be a sound designer at the age of, 16? Or how did you sort of make your way into this part of the industry?
Well, specifically, I started working theatre because I shared a house in Birmingham with a good friend of mine who's a theatre designer. She knew the kind of music that I and my band make very well, and I think she just used to hear that. She used to hear the stuff that we did, and she was always saying to me, "You should bring this stuff into the world of theatre." And 2 years later, I think she got tired of me ignoring her and actually got me a couple of jobs, which led into a sort of fairly. It led me into a kind of working on fairly traditional theatre sort of tours of. Fairly traditional stuff. I had one quite way out job where I ended up arranging the music for a Christmas show. It was with Charlotte Conquest, who you know.
Oh yeah, yeah.
I think the existing music was all piano parts. There's quite a lot of them. There's about 16 songs in this show, and. I arranged a couple in my own fashion, which is quite adventurous and experimental, and they persuaded me to do the rest of the shows, which was a ridiculous amount of work given the complexity of it. But that formed the kind of identity of the sound world in the play. I was still fairly naive about theatre, but it was then that I saw the creative possibilities of sound on stage in theatre.
Great, thanks.
In a way, I'd been designing sound since I was, young. Since I was young, when I started doing music, I was very interested in tapes, manipulating tapes, recording found sounds, objects, slowing tapes down, speeding them up, blah de blah. Creating kind of, I suppose it was. I didn't know it at the time, but it was a kind of music concrete alongside more conventional music. So I was, sound design had been part of my musical process since year dot,
right,
if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
And that kind of informs what I do today. So making a jump into SFX and sort of quite complex musical languages, wasn't really a big jump for me. It was just a change of format, if you see what I mean.
Sure. Thanks, Matt. That's a really helpful sort of segue into what I was going to ask you, which was what is it that a sound designer does? I mean, if I was to look at the job title sound designer, how do you design sound? What goes into it?
Sound design itself covers quite a broad range of disciplines, from the purely technical to the purely creative. And I suppose I cover all of these, and I also cover music composition as well. I could take you through the process. The sound designer would be responsible for the sound equipment in the venue, right, for specifying what equipment gets used in the venue to reproduce recorded sound, and also reinforce live sound. Reinforcement would be the amplification with microphones of an onstage sound or instruments. So if you were designing a musical, your principal job would be to mic up the band, mic up the cast, and make sure all this sounds fabulous, and also obviously specify and set up the sound system, design the sound system. There's also a creative side to it, which is creating a sound world within which the play exists. Now, this sound world might be the diegetic world of sound, which the characters hear. These would probably be more what people imagine when they think sound design, like it would be doors opening, closing,
right? Yeah,
distant
traffic,
bird song,
yeah,
distant bird song.
I've got you.
Funny things happening in the distance. And lastly, is the non-diegetic sound and music of the play, which the characters cannot hear. Now, this might be incidental music. It might be sounds or music that we put in to guide the story along, to prescient of events happening later in the story. It might refer back to. These are storytelling devices.
So that's the sort of stuff like in Macbeth, when we were just doing Macbeth most recently, a lot of the sort of what I would call the soundtrack underneath, like the witches scenes or the banquet scenes, where, you know, the characters aren't hearing big knocks at the door or gunshots or whatever. They're hearing the cracking of those bones or the or those kind of slightly sort of muffled voices that we could hear and stuff like that. It's the stuff, yes, that's going on around the scenes.
Yes. So it might be things like it might be sounds such as static electricity, which implies that something is wrong with the world. The natural order of the world is broken. Interference, it literally is interference, and it would be interference in a supernatural sense, obviously informed by 80s horror films like Poltergeist.
Yeah, of course. I see. Great. So when does work like that, so let's say we've just been working on Macbeth there, when does work for you begin on the show, and what's your approach to that?
Really, work can begin for me a lot of the time from an initial conversation with the director. I have a lot of very useful ideas just from the description of the sound world, the description of trying to achieve. That one initial conversation can tell me quite a lot about how it's going to be, and it will spark a lot of ideas for the play as a whole. For instance, your Macbeth. I think I had a conversation with Charlotte Conquest, the director, sometime. The play was performed in February. Sometime in October, we had a brief conversation of just about music and music and genre and the characters themselves. And from there, the entire sound world was very clear to me.
Right. And does that change if, you know, for example, I mean, we were set very modern here in that Macbeth, but we've done things together where we've been set in a Georgian period or, you know, the 1920s and stuff like that. Does the period tell you about the sound as well in terms of the soundscape?
Yeah. The period, the approach, the staging, these will all inform the sound world. One might make decisions that are counterintuitive. It's Baz Luhrmann's Great Gatsby used Jay-Z and Beyonce.
Right, yeah.
For example, and that was, those kind of, you can make those kind of decisions, or you could stay periods.
So where do the sounds, this might sound a silly question, but where do the sounds come from? Because, I mean, for you, I mean, when I see you in rehearsal, you're usually sat there with your headphones on and you know, your laptop open and creating stuff, or you've got your, you know, little Casio keyboard, creating something there. But where do the sounds come from? Do you make them all, or is there a combination of existing sounds that you go and get, or do you go and find you should make the sound up yourself? So I need a bucket and some water, and I'll create that sound, a bit like a Foley sort of thing.
Well, it's a mixture of all of that. I have quite a large sound library.
Right.
Ridiculously large sound library of various things that I've bought and put together and recorded over the years. And I'll use a lot of those as raw material. I also record, I do record my own stuff as well. I do like going out and recording things, recording new items and doing the whole Foley thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of SFX in Macbeth, which scraping a drain pipe, but really slowed down.
Wow, you know, okay.
Slowing things down. There's a lot of things like that, you know, just manipulating sound. And I have a few methods and processes, which, I mean, I can produce quite quickly from, you know, a drain pipe and a drain pipe and a coin, for example. A lot of things I kind of have already. I use a lot of layering as well within my sound design.
So that's where multiple sounds go on top of each other to make the overall feel. Yeah, because I noticed that with
it's a sort of composition,
right? Because one of the I think it was the second show or third show we worked on with you, Richard III. I remember this. Our very first day of rehearsals. In fact, we all went. Actually, we went to my house, if I remember rightly, and we all had to record. Yes. We all had to record sex noises.
It's difficult on day one, isn't it?
and deep cries or groans or stuff, and then we were all kind of going, where's this going to go? Where does this feature in the show? But then, I suppose you then take it on and you manipulate it and make it into work. Because I noticed there was a lot of that in Macbeth as well. Not those specific noises, but a similar sort of process.
It was funny, actually. Yeah, it's... I don't mind doing it on the first day of rehearsal, but it's kind of easier after a few days.
Just a bit.
Because it's just to be going in sort of completely dry into that kind of, can you make a weird sound, please? It's weird for actors, and it's weird for me to be asking people to do that.
But then you play with those sounds, you manipulate them into what you need. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of happy accidents occur. You know, I'll end up using just throw away things that we've just been experimenting with. Sometimes it's actors warming up. I might record and turn into a sort of ghostly chorus or something like that.
Oh, wow, yeah.
It's just grabbing material and manipulating it.
So what's your favourite part of the process? Because then, you know, we also then move into technical rehearsals where we're starting to see it, you know, sort of in situ, the whole thing, and then we have dress and all of that sort of stuff. Where do you... What's your favourite bit for you, getting started, or...?
I think favourite part for me is the creative side. It's the imagining it all. It's the creation of a world that brings something that the director and nobody else could bring to it, if you see what I mean.
Yeah.
So it's bringing a sound world which manipulates expectations, emotions, adds to the narrative itself.
Yeah. I mean, I must admit, when I remember, Hamlet, that first show of yours that you did with us, will always stick in my mind about how you did, you and Caroline Devlin, the director, you know, dreamed up the idea of the ghost, which was just a voice. And this voice which travelled, but it travelled around the church in Holy Trinity. And it was so electric. It was so, you know, and again, you were just saying about raising expectation and stuff. And I was part of the team, but even when I got to dress rehearsal and heard it all together with the lights, it was so electric and so unexpected. That must give you a real thrill to kind of be able to have that give people that experience.
It's the creative decisions which feel kind of scary, but those are the ones which pay off the most, I think.
Which ones?
The brave creative ones,
yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, you work, you know, all over the world as well, designing and composing and for lots of different companies and all very different. And GSC is particularly different in the sense that, you know, we don't work in theatres. So, you know, you don't have a set rig and you don't have the set, you know, audience facing one way and all of that sort of stuff. You know, we've had you in, you know, churches and castles and museums and all sorts of things. I mean, what additional challenges are there from a sound point of view?
Well, it's manyfold, really.
Not having the kit, for one.
it's manyfold. One is, obviously, for everybody, it's and as producers, obviously, you realise this, it's a budgetary thing, because you're not walking into a venue which has a tuned sound system all waiting for you. It's the acoustic space itself is usually a challenge with site responsive, site specific theatre, and also the general environment, which goes hand in hand with the acoustics. But do you have access to the venue 4 hours a day or 24 hours a day? For example, can you work all night if you want to, or if, you know, are your hours limited? All of that is usually, it's a different thing. I never really think of it as a problem. These as problems, though. Site specific work is my thing, really. As a sound designer, it's what I specialise in. So I never really think of this as these as problems.
Yeah, I love the way that often in the open air as well is how you hide, because the one thing, you know, you've got a beautiful 1930s set or costumes, and then you've got some, you know, 2020 speakers and microphones and stuff. You know, how do you hide all that? And it's fascinating to suddenly walk up one day and go, what's this small brown furry thing? Oh, it's a microphone that Matt's hidden with some leaves.
Or... guys, it's a hedgehog.
Yeah. Or the...
Which literally has happened.
And didn't we have a sheep, a speaker that was a sheep once?
Yes.
And, you know, but then little things like getting the radiogram, you know, the gramophones to work because they are and stuff is so clever, but adds to that world, like you say. So from that, I mean, just mentioning our hedgehogs there and our sheep, is there any particular favourite moments from your time with GSC that you're particularly stay in your mind or you're proud of or particularly proud of or memorable?
Well, there's so many, to be honest.
Yeah,
so,
with that many shows.
So many. Yes. There's so many moments.
How to choose?
Yeah, it's, I'm just flooded, like, flooded with memories. Yes, you asked me what aspect I liked best about sound design, and I think I said the creative kind of imaginative creative side. But the reason I love sound design in theatre and performance so much is the collaborative nature. So it's the everyone will say this, but it's true. It's the collaborative nature. It's working to create something beautiful as part of a team. That's what I. That's the other thing that I like. I like most about it all. So a lot of my happy memories are, I think, just the making.
Yeah.
Of the plays with other people is.
And despite, despite sitting under a gazebo with the rain coming down and your Mac on your on your knees, and and trying to keep your Mac dry, your Apple Mac laptop, should say, not your Mac.
Oh yes.
Dry and battling the hay fever at the same time.
Yeah. You see, I'd forgotten all of that. Totally forgotten all of that.
Before we finish, Matt, you're obviously you don't just do theatre as well, but you also have your own band and you've created music for video games and video games like Pool Panic for Nintendo.
I'm actually the audio designer for Pool Panic.
Audio designer for Pool Panic.
Not composer.
Sorry.
Yeah.
But so loads of stuff and bits for, TV advertisements as well. So can you tell us a little bit about what else are you doing or have you done, and where could we hear any of your band anywhere? Could we go and look for it?
You certainly can. I probably on Spotify, iTunes. The name of the band is Pram, P-R-A-M.
Pram, okay, great.
We've been around for many years since I was quite young. If you were to look at the Domino Records website, we've worked with Domino Records quite a few years. There's quite a few releases on there. I knew you were going to ask me this, so I'll give you a quick, I don't know if you can see. Yes, you can see. Here's some albums. That's me at 18. 22. Last album, Across the Meridian.
Across the Meridian. Okay.
Domino Records. That's where it's on. I think there's still vinyl left. On CD down and download and all of that.
Great.
So that's one thing I do. I do freelance sound art. Worked with Friction Arts in Birmingham on some big show commemorating the closure of the Birmingham wholesale markets.
Right.
I worked as a sound designer with Mark Anderson. He's an international sound artist on there. His show Furious Folly, which is part of the 1418 mm-hmm. now commemorative celebrations, a couple of years ago. I've got a solo project. Might have a solo album out this year if I finish it.
Wow.
Lots of music.
Watch this space.
Yes.
Matt, it's been an absolute pleasure to chat with you, and thank you so much for sharing your thoughts and background on sound design. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Cheers, Matt.